This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. In this segment of our program, we are talking about how the coronavirus crisis is affecting older people in Maine. My guests are Lori Parham, who is State Director for AARP Maine, and Dr. Jeffrey Barkin, a geriatric psychiatrist and Associate Medical Director with Change Healthcare. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you a mature adult? Are you self-isolating? Or are you wondering how to help an older friend or family member who you're worried about? You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. I want to welcome both of you, Lori and Jeffrey. And Lori, I'm going to start. We were just talking about the federal stimulus package. I understand that AARP has been very much involved in negotiations on behalf of senior citizens in Maine and in the country. So instead of my asking you the first question, we're going to go to a voicemail that came in before Maine Calling.
I am wondering whether, as an self-isolated senior in Kennebec County, the funds that have come that will be coming through the bill that was recently passed will affect seniors who are low income, isolated, no transportation, no car. Will there be any funds available directly sent to low-income seniors who only have Social Security, or will they be considered employed or useless or marginalized? Thank you.
Lori Parham.
Yeah, wow. We're getting a lot of questions like this. I'm hearing from a lot of members around Maine, and Senator King mentioned the good news for folks who are on Social Security, that they are included in the stimulus package in terms of those the checks that will go out. So if you are on Social Security and your income, you are lower income, the same requirements that for those who are not on Social Security, $75,000 for an individual, $150,000 for a couple, you will receive a check from the federal government as part of the stimulus. And I also think it's important to share that there are also dollars through the package that are going to go to the agencies like the Area Agencies on Aging and others who really support older people in the community. There are dollars that are going to go that are authorized under the Older Americans Act to help prepare for the virus and the impacts to older people, dollars that will go to the Aging and Disability Resource Centers. Those are our AAAs, and also dollars to help shore up nursing homes. And we also saw that today Governor Mills is also looking at how to increase reimbursements to nursing homes that serve a very vulnerable population. So I would say there are a lot of positive steps in this bill to support older Mainers.
All right. I want to turn now to you, Dr. Barkin. You know, so many seniors are self-isolating right now because that's the public health recommendation, because we know that many senior citizens have chronic health conditions and that it's best for their physical health to stay alone right now. But how is that for their mental health? How are all those people who are listening right now doing, and what can they be doing to help themselves?
So first, what an amazing paradox that the people who are most at risk are older people. So 80% of the deaths that we're seeing from coronavirus are occurring in people over 65. This is a very consequential number of people. Maine is the oldest state. The average age of Mainers is 44, and there are 52 million Americans who are 65 every day. On the one hand, we're needing to protect the most vulnerable people, which are older folks, especially those with medical disorders, from people that are infected. And the only possible way to do this from a public health perspective is social distancing. Yet, the great cruel paradox here is that we have an epidemic of loneliness, particularly in the elderly. And in Maine, a lot of elderly live alone, rural elderly Mainers who live alone are at very, very high risk of depression, anxiety, and worsening anxiety and depression if they've had it before. On top of all of this, there are parts of our state that don't have internet or high-speed internet. So we have to very rapidly resolve the problem of how to safely connect with our neighbors while maintaining social distancing as is being asked of us by the Maine CDC and the CDC and others, while also doing everything that we can to combat the psychological effects of isolation. So I would say it's not social isolation, it's social distancing that we need to do. And we need to become very inventive in ways of interacting with each other so that we're not alone, but that aren't dangerous. And so something as simple as bringing your neighbor an apple pie, it sounds like such a wonderful thing to do, but there's no guarantee that that's safe. And if you are somebody carrying disease, you can easily transmit that disease to your neighbor, which obviously wasn't what you wanted to do in the first place. So I think the problem is isolation. The answer is social distancing. And the true question becomes, how do we connect the two in a way that fosters social distancing while minimizing the terrible mental health effects of loneliness?
Lori, I want to ask you about some of the services for senior citizens. Obviously, all sorts of group activities have been suspended during this crisis, from things that happen at YMCAs to senior centers throughout the state. What about Meals on Wheels, such a critical lifeline for people throughout the state of Maine? Has Meals on Wheels been able to keep up in this coronavirus emergency? And also, has it been able to expand to serve those that maybe it doesn't usually, because people have been able to go to the grocery store until this?
So that's a great question. The two biggest issues that we're hearing about right now from the many communities that we work with through our age-friendly network and through our members are food insecurity and social isolation and feeling disconnected. When I've gotten feedback from some of the area agencies on aging, one of the challenges with Meals on Wheels is that the folks who have been delivering those meals are themselves older Mainers. And so in some cases, there has been a drop in the number of volunteers who have been able to help deliver those meals. So that remains an issue. And so looking for ways, if there are folks who feel like they can deliver those meals safely, pick them up, not go through a lot of interactions, and then get those meals and leave them for an individual, again, without having to have a lot of personal interaction. We're also seeing for folks who may not have been on Meals on Wheels, folks who are immune compromised, who are concerned about going to the grocery store, who may have in the past taken the bus to go to the store, are now very concerned about going out. So I'm hearing from communities who are looking for support to put together food boxes. Age-Friendly Saco, for example, is looking to do this, where they can deliver non-perishable foods to individuals who can't get out or are afraid to get out. So the senior hours have been wonderful, and we're really grateful to our grocery stores across the state, but there are those that can't be served by that wonderful move. And so it's working to figure that out in the meantime.
All right. And tomorrow on Maine Calling, we're going to be doing a program about ways people can help. And we're going to be hearing from all sorts of agencies all over the state of Maine about ways to help. So thank you, Lori, for that. And hopefully we'll have a lot of creative ideas tomorrow. We're going to go to another voicemail that came in before Maine Calling. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm in isolation, not because I've gotten the disease yet, but I'm 83 years old with no family, and I'm totally alone. And because of the lack of people in my life, I don't even get emails from them because there's no one there. My way that I dealt with this extreme isolation before the disease was I went to places in town where I saw people, went to libraries. Now I don't have that. So I would hope that some community activity can be found for people such as I, because I'd never see anyone. I'm in a rural area. Anyway, I hope something can be devised that isolated people, for whatever reason, can be part of the community in some way. I do not have a TV either. So thanks a lot.
Dr. Barkin, that caller's name was Nancy. This story of her being in a very rural place and not able to have any contact with anyone, I'm sure there are many others with her same story. What do you say to Nancy, and what do you say to the rest of us?
Well, this is exactly the problem that I was trying to define. And Nancy, first of all, thank you for sharing what you did, because that's a beautiful wake-up call. And I feel exactly what you're expressing, and I suspect that everybody listening does. I think that it's very important that you do what you just did. You picked up the phone, you left a voicemail, and we're responding. I realize that we're responding through technology, which I can't fully understand, but we're connected. And though it's not as face-to-face as conventional ways, it's social distancing, but you're not socially isolated. So the fact that you called, and hopefully you're listening, hopefully, Nancy, you will feel connected. And I would encourage you and others and all of your listeners, Jennifer, to go out of their way and reach out and call people who maybe you didn't think you knew that well, maybe you didn't think was your friend, and reach out and just say hello. No big expectations, just a hi. And I think that if we begin to do that and make that normative, we will actually be able to bend the curve in the loneliness factor. Another big concern that I have here is the collapse of mental health in the state of Maine and the mental health agencies. There are going to be layoffs. There have been layoffs in the agencies that support our most vulnerable. And that's going to have great impacts on the elderly, because elderly folks interact with their family members. So you can imagine if an older Mainer is caring for somebody with special emotional needs and those services suddenly are taken away, that's going to be a problem right there. It's different than isolation and loneliness. I'd like to add that our mental health infrastructure in Maine is nonprofit, it's highly precarious, and it can go away with the bat of an eye. And I would hope that our policymakers can rapidly come up with ways of funding the agencies so that they could deliver the services that they've been delivering, maybe even fund them to the level that they were funded last year and get creative. We've had catastrophes in MaineCare in the past related to software, which we were able to solve. And I would encourage the stakeholders to preserve the mental health system, the mental health agencies, because those are very, very important services to blunt loneliness and social isolation.
We're going to go to Kitsy calling from Portland. Hi, Kitsy. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I'm calling with a plea that people change our terminology. Use physical distancing, not social distancing. It is possible to be socially in touch with somebody who's 6 feet apart from you. And when we use social distancing, it sounds so alienating, whereas physical distancing we can imagine and see that there is potential within that to still be socially connected. Thanks so much.
Kitsy, thank you. Not the only one I've heard say that recently. Your thoughts, Dr. Barkin?
Well, I work for a company that is 15,000 employees, and we went in 1 week from everybody working in offices to mostly working remote. And I would say that I feel closer to many of my team members and have had more interaction, more social interaction with my team members now that we're all remote than when we were in person. So isn't that paradoxic? I think that Kitsy's point is right on. It's well taken. We should not be using terms like social distancing, or we shouldn't be thinking of social distancing. I like physical distancing. Humans are social animals. And if we are not connected socially, we become prone to physical and mental health conditions. And actually, the biggest risk factor for completed suicide is isolation. So it's critically important that we redefine social connection, to use technology and to do what it takes to be connected with each other while maintaining that 6-foot sphere of physical safety.
All right. Well, we're talking about what this emergency, this coronavirus emergency, means for Maine seniors. If you'd like to call, call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'd like to answer questions regarding what you're going through right now, how you might get help, but we'd also love to hear from senior citizens who have some wisdom to share right now, because we realize that those who are in the older age groups have lived through other things too and may be able to share some wisdom with the rest of us. So either way, please give us a call. I'm going to go to an email from Joan. I am helping an elderly woman who lives alone on SSI. She suffers from blackouts that sometimes cause her to collapse suddenly on the floor. I've been driving her to the supermarket so she can use her SNAP benefits to purchase groceries. No one but the person who is entitled to those benefits can use a SNAP card. I'm almost 70 years myself. How can I continue to do this and comply with CDC guidelines regarding social distance? I would need to drive her in a limousine. So, Lori, that's a very good practical question. We don't want people over a certain age having physical contact with other people. Grocery stores are a place where we will come into physical contact. But if you have SNAP benefits, it has to be you using that card.
You know, that's it's a really good point, Jennifer, and it's not an issue that I've heard has come up before, but it's something that we should definitely look into. Because you do have folks in that age group, and that benefit is hugely important to them. So it adds just another layer. So first of all, we're seeing folks who shouldn't be going out at all, who don't have any choice but to. And now this becomes another barrier. So it's definitely something that needs to be looked into.
I also wanted to ask you, Lori, about some practical things that maybe AARP or other agencies that focus on senior citizens may be doing. We've heard the advice that people ought to be stocking up on their prescriptions, maybe having a 90-day supply instead of a 30-day supply. Are there now delivery services available that have been responsive to this crisis?
You know, we are seeing that is advice that we've been giving to folks and very early on before we've gotten to where we are now, that especially for some folks who typically have a 30-day supply, you can talk to your doctor about waiving that requirement. You are now able, with the right information and an ID, you can pick medications up for an individual. Some places have drive-throughs, so that's definitely something that we're suggesting that folks do. And I want to say, in this idea of what are some of the tips or what's going on, well, this is an incredibly serious crisis, and there are a lot of people in need. I've been really amazed at the number of people, especially as I've talked to folks in our age-friendly communities across the state, because they're really on the front lines, you know, sharing with us, you know, what those needs are, how they're stepping up to help one another, and how you have older people helping other older people who are being positive, who are organizing social telephone calls. I think about the caller who said she's all alone and doesn't even have a TV. I love that in Bodenham, they've picked up on the trend from other places, and they're ringing bells every night at 8 p.m. And I just thought we should start ringing our bell for our neighbors. So we are seeing people, and it's very main, but we are seeing people, older people in this time of real need, step up to find innovative solutions to help each other. And I did want to mention AARP this week launched a site called AARP Community Connections. It's a way for our volunteers across the country who've been out and active and now are also at home doing the physical distancing to support folks who are looking for a call. So volunteers can sign up to make calls, but if you're someone who would love to just hear a friendly voice on a regular basis, you can sign up to get a call. And so I wanted to mention that because we're having to look at different ways to connect to one another. But it's happening, and I think we can build on what's happening and do even more.
And related to what you're saying, Lori, we have an email from Gail who says, please get that lady's address or phone number so we can call and or write her. I'm so sad for her. And it would help me as well. Someone make a list of folks such as her. So we were talking about Nancy, and we want to let Gail know and others who are listening and worried about her that we have been in touch with Nancy. And again, tomorrow we are going to do a program on how to help others. And Lori mentioning now the AARP Community Connections Program. I'm going to go to Tim calling from Limerick. If you could be quick, Tim, we're going to have to go to a station ID in just a second.
Okay, I'm going to be very quick. I'm 70 years old. I was I've been alone basically for since 2013, and what I do is I dance and sing. I put on the radio and dance and sing and have a smile on my face every morning, thinking that it's going to be another good day, and that's where it is so far. And I suggest that everyone, even if they're alone, like that woman that called earlier, and she can sit in a chair and move her feet and move her fingers and anything else, just to keep in beat with the rhythm of the music. Rhythm is the way the whole world works. Watch the birds. Study the birds and write a diary. Write a diary of what's happening. This hasn't happened for 100 years. And that's what I'm doing. I got 14 pages written already about every single day, how many more, and what's happening and what they're doing to resolve the situation.
And Tim, I love your advice.
To all of them. That's what we can give to all of our children, grandchildren, and everything else. Even if they don't contact us now, we have a history to give them for later.
Great. Write that diary, listen to some music, dance. Dr. Barkin, what do you think?
A couple of things that I think are really important. One is that the federal government, insurance companies, Medicaid, MaineCare now allow telephone visits or televideo visits. So good old plain telephone. You can reach out to your providers, your doctors, your therapists, your social workers. That's all good. It's just like being there in person. So a telephone contact is billed just like a face-to-face visit. That's a terrific provision. The other question that came up is about medication supply, and I would definitely recommend that folks try to get a 90-day supply of medication. A lot of our elderly Mainers, our neighbors, live in rural areas where transportation issues can arise, and I know that for a lot of my patients, I've been encouraging them to have 90-day supplies.
Well, we are talking with Lori Parham of AARP and Dr. Jeffrey Barkin about how older people are being affected by the coronavirus crisis. When we return, we will be back to continue our discussion with Lori and Jeffrey. This is Maine Calling. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling. We are talking about how older Mainers have been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. Joining me, Dr. Jeffrey Barkin. He's a geriatric psychiatrist. Also with me, Lori Parham. She is director of AARP Maine. As always, we want to hear from you. Share your questions and concerns. Email talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling. Post a comment to our Facebook page or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Adita, who's calling from Durham. Hi, Adita. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm glad you're doing this programming. I just wanted to say that I'm an elderly person. I'm normally self-employed part-time, and I've been quarantining at home. I normally have access to the internet at the library, and my library is closed, and I feel very isolated because the only access I have to what's going on in the world at large is my radio. So I'm really glad you guys are talking at length about these things, and I'm very frustrated that I couldn't get internet through Comcast, and it's made me very anxious, and I wish that it was regulated. I wish that the internet was regulated in our state. And I have a downstairs neighbor who's also elderly, and I check in on her by telephone, and I try to knock on her door and then on her outer door and then step back about 5 feet and talk to her in her doorway to make sure she's okay. And that's it.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling in, Adita. Dr. Barkin, thoughts on what Adita said?
Yeah, I mean, you're so spot on, because our sense of human connection is the thing that keeps us healthy, both physically and mentally. But remember that there was a time not that long ago that we didn't have the internet, and we were able to rely upon each other, even in rural areas where we were socially distanced. Radio is a wonderful media. One of the great things about radio is that it touches people everywhere and that there's a sense of shared community. So the fact that you're calling in and that Lori and I can respond live, that right there is a sense of community. And though it's not nearly the same as my being able to come over and give you a hug, at least it's something. And I think we're going to have to really be inventive and do the best that we can using older technologies. I hate to call radio older, but it was around and very effective before the internet. We'll realize what technologies we can depend upon and what technologies that we can't depend upon. I would say that a lot of people do have access to the internet, and I would encourage those folks to use video-based technologies because it gives you the visual element. It's not just the voice element. And I want to emphasize that the more senses that we have, the better. The other advantage of video, when you have it, and I understand that not everybody does, is that it gives orienting clues and cues. And when people get older, they become, especially if they have memory disorders, more easily confused with isolation and those lack of cues. So when you can, go video, but when you can't, thank goodness there's audio and that there's radio, right?
Adita, thank you so much for your call. We're going to move on to Dick, who's calling from Gardner. Hi, Dick. Go ahead.
How you doing? I'm calling in regards to the elderly lady that called in earlier, the 83-year-old. I heard her struggling with the isolation and many other people listening to the show. I just wanted to let you know that there are online resources out there where people can go on the internet on their laptop or desktop or even download the app on the phone. For instance, I work for Maine Behavioral Healthcare, which is under the Maine Health umbrella. And I work in the Rockland office. And right now, the Rockland Peer Support Recovery Center is offering peer support over Zoom for people. And they also put online resources that come up that would be helpful to people, too.
Dick, let me ask you this. I mean, obviously, it sounds like a really, really wonderful service. A lot of people in Maine do not have high-speed internet, so that's not an option. But there are other people who just saying, all we have to do is go on Zoom, and that's kind of scary. Are there folks at your organization who can get someone on the phone and walk them through how to set that up?
I don't necessarily know if there's one person that can do that, but if any of the clients that I work with or anybody really, I have no problem helping people out with it. It's fairly easy to do. I'm not the most technologically best person, but I can do it. So
yeah, that's right. Yeah. Maybe the message here is give it a try. It's sometimes things are a lot easier than you think they might be. And Dick, I appreciate you calling in and talking about that resource. Dick calling from Gardner. We'll go to Jean, who's calling from Poland. Hi, Jean. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I'm calling about the issue of grocery shopping for those of us who are older and living alone. A lot of the advice is just get a family member to go to the grocery store for you, but those of us who are aging alone don't have family members to do that for us. And I went yesterday. I get up at the crack of dawn to go to the 6 to 7 a.m. seniors only shopping hour and found it impossible in the store to maintain 6-foot distance from other people. And I have some good practical suggestions for the supermarkets about how they can make this work better, but I don't know where to go with them.
Well, why don't you say them right now on the radio?
Okay. So first, make all aisles one way. Put up signs to make each aisle in the store one way, because you can't pass other people in a grocery store aisle and be 6 feet away from them going in opposite directions. Second, put some tape down on the floor in those aisles that divides them into 6 foot sections so that people understand that only one shopper can be in each of those 6 foot sections at a time. Third, do the same thing at the checkout counters. Again, I heard people say, well, as long as the cart's between me and the other person, we must be 6 feet apart, right? No. So I think just some really simple things like that. And again, and I think what that will make clear is you can't have more people in the store that can fit than can fit in those 6 foot sections. So it'll give the market some idea of how many people they can actually practically have at the store at the time socially distancing.
Well, Jean, I love your suggestions. Lori, thoughts?
Those are great suggestions, and we're actually seeing more grocery stores going to delivery as well as curbside pickup. I know that Hannaford had so many people rush to do delivery that they got overwhelmed. But we've heard from Walmart that's doing delivery and also doing drive-through pickup, and they'll put the items right in your trunk so that there's not even an interaction. And then we're also seeing some of Maine's local grocers starting to do the same thing. So there is a movement in that direction. The governor has talked about the need for distancing in stores where people have to go. And so she's right on that this is something that we need to look at and that people really need to understand and take the distancing seriously. That's going to be hugely critical.
Jean, thanks so much for calling in today. We're going to go now to Thomas Moiser. He's a clinical psychologist and founding director of the University of New England Center for Excellence in Aging and Health. Thanks for calling in, Tom.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
I understand you've done a lot of research around this. Tell us what you've learned about the biggest problems facing older people right now.
So at UNE, we have a large group of older adults, primarily in Southern Maine, who join with us to support our research, but it's also a lifelong learning community. And in that community, we have a lot of give and take. There's a lot of communication. And what I'm hearing from folks is that there is an increase of anxiety and worry over this situation. And I think the fact that the endpoint is unclear kind of adds to that. There's some ambiguity involved, of course. There's a little bit of increase in depression, and that worries me because prolonged isolation and depression often go hand in hand, and that's something we have to think about in terms of the outreach we're doing to those in our communities. The other thing that strikes me is how resilient people in this group, this age group, are. If you've lived to 70 or 80, you've been through tough times before. And you have resources within yourself to draw on. And I actually take a lot of comfort personally in that.
Tom, what are some of the solutions you've been working on for the challenges that older people are having?
So with our Center on Aging at UNE, we've done a lot of high-touch stuff where we're actually meeting in person, doing presentations, having group discussions. And this crisis has caused us to really rethink our approach. And I know you've talked a lot on this program already about online being a potential solution. And really it is. It is for those that have the ability to access it. And that's an issue for some. But it's a place to start. So we are developing a series of online peer discussion groups where people can just get together and talk about what it's like to be in this situation, share tips and mutual support. We're also developing fun learning topics. I've got a bread baker who wants to do a bread baking session online and discussion. And it's drawing out people from across our university that want to help out in this way. And it's really kind of exciting.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling in. That's Thomas Moiser. He's a clinical psychologist with the University of New England. I appreciate your calling in today on the special two-hour Maine calling. We'll go to Tom, who's calling from Tom, are you calling from Martinvale?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi. Hey, I've been listening, to the whole show, and you're right on the money. And just the other day, we contacted a close friend who had lost her husband a few years back, moved out of her home across the street from us, and we called Jerry, and she was so appreciative to have us call in. And it gave me a thought, and not to take a lot of time, but I think anyone who's listening probably can see the value in, you know, all of these different points that people have been bringing up. I think everyone should grab a pad of paper, keep it with them, and as they go through their day, they're going to get thoughts of who it is that they know that they think might benefit from exactly what you folks have been talking about, especially the contact, any way that you can do it, because she was so appreciative that, I mean, it just made us feel great to have reached out, and I think there's so much value to it, and especially when you say the thing about depression, depression, you know, can be deadly, and you know, that's a serious point. And if you care about people, which most of us have, you know, lots of people we care about, I think that be proactive. Don't think about it. Don't think it's a great idea. Do something about it. Grab a pad of paper, stick it in your pocket, and as you get the thoughts of who, write them down and then act on it. Because I think when this is all over, or at least, you know, hopefully we'll get to that point and it won't be seasonal, I think that it's going to be, they're going to write books about this.
Yep. Tom, thanks so much for your call. And Dr. Barkinas, Tom was talking, I was thinking, you know what? We maybe not only ought to be doing this for people we know who are older adults, but really for everybody.
Absolutely. I mean, this is going to redefine how people date. It's going to redefine the whole concept of socialization for a period of time. I want people to know that this too shall pass, but we're going to have to learn to cope. And I think that we're going to develop very, very quickly strategies. We're already seeing young people being able to continue their school studies, their classes online. And again, you know, online doesn't help everybody, but it's a start. To Tom's point, which is so well taken of doing something, there's a whole psychology on what's called learned helplessness. And learned helplessness is when really any animal, it originally was studied in dogs, believe it or not, when they're unable to change a task and feel helpless, they become despairing. But when you change things so that they can change the task, even though it may not change the result, they don't become despairing. So the concept of avoiding learned helplessness by doing things, by making lists, by speaking with people, and ultimately by acting are the forces that will combat this learned helplessness, which is a big driver of despair. Another thought, Jennifer, as you bring up that it's not just older people, is we've gotten to a point in our culture where we're completely stratified generationally. It's not typical for a 15-year-old to be hanging out with a 55-year-old. That used to be the case. So intergenerational interactions have fallen by the wayside, and I think this may actually be an opportunity to revisit it, and a terrific chance for perhaps young people who are more tech savvy to guide older people through being able to do something as simple as put an app on their phone, knowing how to use Skype or FaceTime or something like that, simply because they're more familiar, all while maintaining the social distance. So I think it becomes an opportunity to leverage what we have across generations and across Maine to combat learned helplessness, which really translates to this sense that there's nothing that I can do about the situation, when the truth is there are certain things that we can do a lot about, and there are other things that we can't do anything about. And I think that as we focus more on the things that we can do things about, our despair will go down and our sense of effectiveness will go up. We'll come together. People who have a history of anxiety and depression need to not feel any sense of shame or stigma. They need to come out of the woodwork and ask for help, right? They need to be able to ask for a virtual hug or a virtual, you know, need to chat for 5 minutes. So I think we're going to learn rapidly strategies we're going to have to learn. Necessity has always been the mother of invention, and that's going to be the case here. So we're going to have to learn how to use technology and how to use each other to bridge these gaps in loneliness.
Tom, thanks so much for your call. We're going to go to David, who's calling from Ludlow. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm isolated in the deep woods. I own a pretty good size of land lot out here in the woods, but I'm close to 70. I'm fairly healthy, but I know some neighbors down the road. At least I thought I knew them, but they didn't help me at all. I got back from central Maine, and in the county I was in, which was Hancock County, had zero cases of coronavirus. So I know I didn't bring that to the county. And yet these people, when I got back from, because I'm sort of like a snowbird. I tend to escape the deep snow cover for a couple of months, and I went to Canada for 3 weeks. And I chose that over Mississippi because I didn't want to get exposed to the coronavirus. So anyways, I'm all alone. I'm isolated in the woods. I'm practically blind in one eye, and my sight is not good in my other eye. And people just don't reach out to me. I went to a Baptist church, but I realized that I needed a big gallon of milk and some eggs, a simple thing like that, and I don't know where to turn because it seems like I can't get help, and I don't know who to call and who to reach, and I feel isolated. It's a feeling of helplessness, almost a paralysis, but yet at the same time, it's kind of weird because I kind of relish the loneliness because actually I find it serene, so I'm kind of conflicted with it, so I'm not depressed.
Yeah. David, thanks so much for calling in. And Lori Parham, I just looked it up. Ludlow, where David's calling from, is in Aroostook County.
Yeah, it's interesting that David talked about, nothing here yet. And as we've heard Dr. Shah say, no one should be complacent at this time. Just because a case hasn't been reported doesn't mean that the virus is not spreading, and so it's really important to continue to be careful. There are resources in Aroostook County. The Aroostook Area Agency on Aging is a wonderful organization that serves the entire county, and that's a lot of ground to cover. And so that's definitely one place where he could reach out to see about help. We're getting a lot of questions through our website at me@aarp.org, and we're doing our best to get back with to people as soon as we can to help locate resources locally for different individuals. I also know up in Presque Isle, there's an age-friendly effort. In Caribou, there's an age-friendly effort. So you could also reach out to your municipality, and they may be able to direct you to resources locally that will be helpful.
All right, David, thank you so much for calling, and good luck to you up there in Ludlow, Maine. Dr. Barkett, I wanted to ask you about something. You know, many senior citizens, many people who are older than, gosh, even 50 or 60, have lived through some really tough stuff already. Can what we're going through now, can the pandemic, can the fear that's out there bring back trauma from the past?
That's a wonderful question. Absolutely. So people who have been traumatized in the past can have re-triggering of trauma when they re-experience, even decades later, another unrelated trauma. So another group of people that I'd put high in psychologic risk factors are those who have had high levels of trauma, either as children or adults. And I'd put them in the same risk category as folks with anxiety and depression, just in terms of increased susceptibility. A point that David made of how he's feeling, which I think is really important, is an element of feeling shunned. And we know from past infectious disease outbreaks that the fear of being infected and the fear of being infectious really is the biggest fear. And you saw this in the Ebola crisis when healthcare workers and physicians were being killed by the very people that they were trying to help, because the people that they were trying to help were shunning them. So this dynamic of shunning will get worse because it's an infectious disease. So we have to bear that in mind and be oh so careful that we are mindful to not shun the very people that need the help, all the while maintaining that magical 6-foot distance.
And Lori, I want to talk about a conversation I heard this past weekend on Weekend Edition with Scott Simon, and he was talking about ways to talk to the older people in your life, how to not be patronizing or you know, sort of express ageism if you're reaching out to someone you care about who happens to be older.
You know, it's such a good point, and it makes me laugh a little. I'm far away from my parents, which is really hard. They're down in Florida, and you know, I can't help but have reminded them probably too many times about how careful they need to be, and had a little bit of frustration on the other end. And I think that's, you know, it's because we care. But there's a way. I am through my line of work, I'm friends with a lot of older Mainers. And it's really been more about, for me, checking in and saying, you know, send me a text. If you text, I'm happy to check in by phone. If there's something you need, you know, I encourage you to be careful. I'm happy to help out. And so there are ways to do it, I think, that show you care without the individual feeling like they can't do anything for themselves. And what we're seeing with our wonderful volunteers who for the last number of weeks were going to Augusta with us each week, and now they're home too, is that they're finding ways to be active and creative. They're making phone calls. They're organizing folks locally to help those who can't get out. They're writing letters to folks, and they've gotten me writing letters. And so I think what we see, as is often the case here in Maine, is that older Mainers are a real resource in this crisis. There are those who absolutely need help, but there are others who are giving back every day, and that's the good news that keeps me going.
And I wanted to ask you as well, Dr. Barkin, if you have some guidance for all of us and how to how to approach people we love who we may be concerned about because we know they're self-isolating, but we also want to make it very clear that we're not, you know, throwing them a pity party.
Yeah, that's a great question. It becomes the issue of boundaries. You want to ask, how are you doing? But you don't want somebody to feel put on the spot by being asked how you're doing, right? I think the way to do that is simply to say hello and to pause. And I think the impact of us reconnecting, and we live in very strange, politically charged times where the level of discord and anger is high. But that the process dynamic of reaching out and just saying hello will in and of itself lead to a change in group behavior, okay? And the more inclusive we are as a community, the greater chance we're going to come out of this crisis sooner. We can't allow divisiveness. We can't allow isolation. We just don't have the wiggle room for those things. And part of being a leader in healthcare, as a lot of doctors that I've seen over the past weeks step up to the plate, like Dr. Shah, is emphasizing resiliency. And resiliency is the capacity of a system, a society, to come together under stress. And older people are some of the most resilient people I've met. Personally, a lot of my friends are older than me, and I always learn from them, and I tell them, I don't want you to think I'm using you or anything like that, but I'm going to tap you for your wisdom. And when we appreciate other people for their wisdom and for their experience, they're going to feel included, and that's going to be necessary and absolutely important for our coming out of this. The other thing I would tell people is that we are going to come out of this, that we've been a very, very resilient nation and a very resilient world. A lot has changed over the past number of years, and a lot of things have changed rapidly. But I think that it's not the end of the world. We need to stay focused and we need to stay together. And I know that we'll look back after the pandemic and catastrophe with a lot of good things learned and a lot of positive lessons learned as well.
Well, thank you so much, both of you. That is Dr. Jeffrey Barkin, a geriatric psychiatrist, also with us for this past hour, Lori Parham with AARP Maine. This is Maine Calling.